Greetings and welcome to Baron Crazes Visions of Horror, Season Number 1, Episode 34, covering the week of November 5th to the 11th, with your host, hey, it's I, Baron Craze. Now, before I get started, we did play Ground Meat with the track Pathological Silence. The band is found on Facebook and also through Bandcamp, and we ask you to go out there and support the bands by buying their music and not being a complete, you fill in the blank, and stealing the music. Now, I've been trying to get this show to go off in the air since Sunday. And why have I had a delay? Oh, it's just a choice good reason. Anybody who ever done voiceovers or is in a band will definitely understand this next little phrasing. Have you ever effed up so many times that you've gotten so frustrated that when you actually go back and count how many times you've done it, you're tallying over 50 takes? That's right. I have had a bit of a problem just coming up with the intro, let alone the first day of the show. I screwed it up. I butchered it. I did everything you could imagine wrong every single time. No matter how hard I tried, I would screw up after a while my own show name. That's right. Baron Craze became a whole bunch of different things. Vision became Division, a Vision, a Vision. I had everything going on. So, little frustration kind of mixed in there pretty quick. So, with that being said, there, of course, was frustration, anger, and then more frustration. So, the solution was bag it. Then I tried again, and I kept screwing it up. So, bag it again, and now here we are. It's make or break it. I'm going to get it done, or I'm going to screw it up many times over, and it'll become a complete hilarity for you all to enjoy. With that being said, let's discuss what I saw on Sunday, November 5th. By the way, I highly encourage you to, you know, watch these movies that I'm talking about. Make up your own mind about them, because I can't sit here and write countless reviews. I try to do as many as I can, and then I do it this way. Now, for the Visions of Horror, especially for next year, we're putting this out there now. If you like these shows, you enjoy what I'm doing here, and you have a movie that you want me to watch, it's pretty simple. You tag us on Facebook under the horrortimes.com, on the Horror Times. You can also, you know, give us a comment on the horrortimes.com page. You can, you know, hit me up as Baron Craze on Facebook, The Baron's Crypt on Facebook. Also find me on Instagram or on Twitter, or now known as X. Any one of these, if you've got a film that you want me to watch, by the way, that I can find for free, I'm not going to go out there and start spending money for everybody's movie. You want me to watch it, send me a link, send me something. I will watch your movie. I will critique your film, and we can go from there. With that being said, so again, on Sunday, November 5th, I saw the film Killer Party from 1986, rated R, 1 hour and 31 minutes long. No, it's not celebrating an anniversary. It is a horror comedy film. The director was William, and I'm just going to spell this last name, F-R-U-E-T. The writer was Barney Cohen, and it stars Martin Hewitt, Ralph Seymour, Eileen Wilkes, Paul Bartel, and Joanna Johnson. The company that put it out was MGM. Now for a little summary. And this is very interesting. It's April Fool's Day, and the sisters of Sigma Alpha Pi have found the perfect place to throw a party. An abandoned fraternity house where a guillotine pledge lost his head in a hazing gone slightly awry. I told you it was going to be interesting. But there's more. But shortly after the reveille begins, the student body count starts to rise as the vengeful pledge returns from the grave and makes it a party to die for. Yes, you heard me say all that correctly, and that is some of what happens in the movie. All right, so the internet movie rating for this is a 5.0. I would probably give it somewhere between 4.5, maybe a 5, depending on the mood. Release date was originally May 9th of 1986, and the taglines for this film, there are two of them. Again, I always put the emphasis on the words, or if it's a question mark or such, I try to give you that kind of sense of that, you know, you're right there looking at that movie poster. So here you go. By the end of the dance, some of the sorority sisters will be dead on their feet. Too wordy, too long, not enough emphasis. It's just, you know, not there. Dedicated to the class of 86. I get it. Dedicated, dead. Yeah, you get it. But, you know, it's got something there, a little flair. Yeah, it's there. But the first one is just far too long. As a tagline doctor, I always stress this. 3 to 5 words. You maybe squeeze a 6 out of it, depending if it's a number or a small word like an A or an of. But for the most part, it's 3 to 5 words. Your second one could work in that. I mean, you're technically looking at 6 because of the 86 put into it. But the first one is just, it has no oomph to it. It doesn't do anything to snag hold of the viewer of that poster. All right. A little bit of trivia for you. This was filmed at the University of Toronto, where part of Urban Legend from 1998 was shot. And I also should mention this, because I think this is kind of significant. The film suffers from severe cuts by the MPAA. And as a result, most of the murders occur off camera and feature very little to no gore or violence. Because of this, the filmmakers edit the film in such a way that the murders seem to be happening immediately after each other in quick succession. When the film was originally shot, more time had passed between each murder, which included special effects and on-screen violence. So basically, the filmmakers realized, we have a massive problem here because we're being gutted by a censor board that's going to decide what adults may see and what adults may not see. Isn't that wonderful? Don't you like others making your decisions for you? Well, this film was referenced in 2 movies. First off, it was in the Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher film from 2006. And then, with an interesting way to put that, and then the next film was Then Night Comes in 2018. All right, almost had another bobble there on getting these things pumped out as fast as I can. All right, moving right along, my opinion. Well, what can I say here? There's camp, and then there's camp. And then there's some more camp, and then it really gets campy. Then we get a little comedy thrown with a little bit of horror. Then we go back to the camp. Then we hit a little bit of mystery, and then a lot of mystery. Then we get a little suspense. Yes, we got suspense. Then we get some laughs. Yes, it's just a little touch of a romance. Back to suspense. Back to camp. Back to comedy over to mystery. And then we finish with a little horror. That's really what the movie's all about. Sounds like it's all over the place? Yeah. Well, that is assisted by the opening. The opening is the strangest opening that I have ever witnessed in all the countless films I have seen in my entire lifetime, which has to tally somewhere around 3,000 movies easily. And this one, I have to say, hands down, is the strangest opening to a movie. Now, for those who have not seen it, you might want to fast forward about, I say, about a minute. All right? So here we go. Here's what's happening. Now, there's a good 9 minutes before the actual movie begins. The opening 9 minutes pulls the rug out from underneath the viewer. I mean, I'm telling you, it happens. But not once. Rather, twice. There are 2 opening segments. I told you, it's strange. We've all seen one. But have you ever seen a film that has 2 false openings? This has it. And did a kind of a fun jump of jumping on the cliches at the time. You know, those kind of gotcha scares, a little bit of the drive-ins. Obviously, the rock music is thrown into it. Something you would have seen on MTV way back when there was a music television, which has probably been replaced by what you could essentially call YouTube. Basically, the movie tells a tale of 3 young women pledging the sorority campus, right? So we get all that. And we get all those shenanigans and everything else is happening. But it's that opening that gives one you think is happening, And then all of a sudden, another opening occurs right on top of it before the movie actually starts. It's like it's padding itself. And at the same time, it does this weird opening, which in a way, I think, makes the film have a little of a cult following because of the weird opening. There's no movie like it. None. I mean, we all get a little of these films where there's always a little setup in the beginning. We've all seen them. They're all there, right? I mean, Friday the 13th from 1980 has a bit of that. I mean, it kind of has that little false opening. I mean, we get what's happening. But here, you have these two sequences. They're long. They're very involved. But neither one makes any bit of sense. I mean, how should I put it? You watch the music video. And then when the music video ends, we basically see some girl in her bedroom watching the video. And then the movie is basically starting from that standpoint. And at that moment, that's how weird it is. Okay? That's your setup. That is bizarre. But that's what you get. So I saw this film on my Blu-ray. And with that being said, I'm going to close this one out. Playing some music here from a band called We Have the Moon, and the track is Killer Party. The band is found on Facebook and Instagram. The thing goes out to the label Rockshots, which is found on rockshots.eu, also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So enjoy this. Yeah! right, welcome to then Monday, November 6th, with the film being The Prey from 1983, rated R, 1 hour and 20 minutes in length, celebrating a 40-year anniversary. Genre, horror. Director, Edwin Brown. The writers for this were Edwin Brown and Summer Brown. Then we have this starring Debbie Thurston, Steve Bond, Lori Letthin, Robert Wald, and Gail Gaines. The company that put it out was New World Pictures. Summary, three young couples set off into the mountains for a weekend of climbing, drinking, and lovemaking. Seriously, that's what it says. But little do they know that they are stumbling into the terrain of a fearsome predator, a wild man, horrifically burned as a child many years ago in a fire that which engulfed his gypsy camp and left him as the only one alive. Now he roams the woods in search of his next human prey. All right, this film got a rating of 4.4 out of 10. I give a flat 4 to it. Release date was November 4th of 1983. Tagline, there's only one, so here we go. It's not human, and it's got an axe. Wow. Thrilling. Okay. You know, I mean, you could have easily gone, you know, something along the lines of, you know, some fortunes will be foretold, or, you know, the foretelling of the future for some. You know, we could have fun with it. You know, you had a gypsy, could have had a little fun with that. But let's get into that gypsy aspect, shall we? Because we got a little trivia, and I thought this was probably one of the most interesting trivia things I've read in quite a while. Now, I'm going to read this out. Please keep all your laughter, if you have any, to yourselves. I don't need to hear the comments when I read this trivia. The Federal Association of Gypsies, also known as F.A.G., sent an official protest to Edwin and Summer Brown, stating that the film was prejudicial towards the gypsy community, and the portrayal of gypsies as lustful, unsophisticated, and dangerous presented the typical stereotypes perpetrated about our people. The statement highlighted the dialogue that gypsies always go away permanently as particularly offensive. We are proud and we're not going anywhere. We are here to stay. The F.A.G. correspondence ended with. Now, it should be noted that the Federal Association of Gypsies, which is something I looked up, I really couldn't find a lot about that. It seems that it changed its name at some point to the National Federation of Gypsy. So maybe that's the name now. And if it's not, my sincere apologies to this group of people. I try to find out the right name to use, but I can only go with what little information that I'm able to see. I mean, there was some other sites and things out there, but nothing really pointed me in the correct direction of what you wanted to use as a, as a group or as an association name. So I'm sorry if I'm not using the correct one. I'm just using what was on the Internet Movie Database. If this information is incorrect and you are a gypsy, then I would say contact that website and make the correction to the trivia so that it has the right information being there. Something that you could say that was the Federal Association of Gypsies and then put in parentheses, now known as, and then you fill in the blank. All right, with that being said, it is referenced in a few films. Video Violence from 87, 976 Evil from 88, The Cavern from 2005, and Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher film from 2006. It spoofs The Night of the Living Dead from 68, and my opinion on the film. Well, look, it's an 80s slasher. I think that's pretty much really going to sum up a lot of this. I do want to mention that it doesn't really have a lot of originality. It's really bare bones kind of plot. It's got a lot of those typical, stereotypical characters. Very cookie cutter, very basic, very one-dimensional. The music's very uninspired. A lot of prediction here, excuse me, a lot of predictable plot points, a lot of the storyline is telegraphed very easily. The killer POV shots, obviously, they're just in abundance in the movie. You know, it does try to give a little bit of extra. And I think the only spot it really does that is that the cinematography in the wilderness is pretty damn good. It's almost as if you were watching something from National Geographic on a nature preserve almost. I mean, just kind of getting that wildlife filmography going into that. I thought that was maybe the one shining beacon moment, but that's not what horror fans come to see. They don't want to see a movie all about nature. They want to see, you know, the blood, the guts, but they want to have characters that we can really start to root for and get involved in. But yeah, there's the actor, Jackson Boswick. You know, he's in this film, right? And he plays the park ranger, Mark O'Brien. And really, I think the entire thing, the reason he's in here is so he's playing his banjo for no other reason to show that he can play the banjo. I mean, I don't think there's another reason why he's included. It's all about the banjo, and one more time, the banjo. That's right. I was waiting for a dueling banjo scene, but really didn't get something like that. I think that would have been at least somewhat of interest. Someone could have pretended they played a banjo and gone against them. All right. I mean, there's not really any kind of reason for what's happening in the film, why it's happening. And I really have to say this, and I hate to do this, but there's a part where your brain's going to shut off and you're actually going to start forgetting who was who in this film. You're really going, your brain's going to be like, pop, I don't remember anything. So that's going to be kind of interesting for you to figure out if you enjoy or not. Yeah, there's some violence. There's some gore. It's typical slasher. So that's what you get. You can find the film on Tubi. Tubi's got so much out there. It's incredible. And with that, we're going to be playing a band called Axe Minister. That's all one word, with the track Prey, which is P-R-E-Y, if you were curious. That's also obviously the name of the film, Prey, not Prey as in, oh, Lord, help us now. Nope, it is You Are My Prey. All right, so the band Axe Minister is found on a .ca. Also look for them on Bandcamp and Facebook. And thanks goes out to Asher Media Relations, found on Facebook, also at AsherMediaRelations.com, and of course through Twitter. All right, Tuesday, November 7th, saw the film They Live from 1988. It was rated R, 1 hour and 34 minutes in length, celebrating a 35th anniversary. It's a horror, sci-fi, and action film by director John Carpenter, who also wrote the screenplay along with Ray Nelson. Now, look, you guys all know who was in this film, but I'm going to go over it just to help out. We have Roddy Piper, Keith David, Meg Foster, George Buckflower, and Peter Jason. Just to name a few, there's a ton of other actors in this movie, and if I was to go on and list them, we would never get the show done. All right, the company that put it out was Universal Pictures. All right, let me tell you the summary, and then I'm going to tell you also the reason I watched this particular film on Tuesday. There was another reason. So let me get into a couple of these things. So summary, they influence our decisions without us knowing it. They numb our senses without us feeling it. They control our lives without us realizing it. They live. Horror master John Carpenter, Halloween and Thing, directs his heart-pounding thriller in which aliens are systematically gaining control of Earth by masquerading as humans and lulling the public into submission. Humanity's last chance lies with a few lone drifters gathering together and stumbling upon a harrowing discovery. A unique pair of sunglasses that reveals a terrifying and deadly truth. This got a rating of a 7.2. I give it a 7.5. Release date was originally November 4th. Of 1988. All right, let me stop here for a moment and tell you why I was watching this film on this particular day of Tuesday the 7th. Here in the United States, it was known as Election Day. I don't really get into politics, but somebody said they thought it was a big good film for that. I decided, okay, let's all watch this film together. We did. I just brought back a lot of memories of seeing this film back when it was released in 88. I didn't get a chance to see it in the theaters then, but it had always become one of those things that when it was on, I would watch it because I like Carpenter movies, and this was just another one. And this one, I'll be very honest, is a cult classic, but we'll get more into the opinion in just a moment. Let's talk about five different taglines. The third one, I hate to say this, is far too long, so is the last one. So the third and the fifth one are just way, way too long. When I read them, you'll definitely understand what I mean by that. All right, the first one, and the first one is a cool line in the movie, yes. But I think, it depending on how they put it on the movie poster, it really depends on a lot. So here we go. I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubble gum. And let's face it. Classic kind of line. Everybody remembers it. It just sells the movie in such a way. Obey or else. Alien invasion of the subliminal kind. All right. Number three. Again, this is a little too long, but here we go. They control what you see. They decide what you hear. You think you're people just like you? You're wrong. Dead wrong. All right, number four, who are they, and what do they want? And lastly, you see them on the street, you watch them on TV, you might even vote for one this fall. You think they're people just like you, you're wrong, dead wrong. That's got a real political tinge to it, you can tell that. But it's far too long for a movie poster. It just doesn't really get there. All right, so some trivia. John Carpenter brought real homeless folks into the production for several scenes. Smaller characters and gave them some food as well as paychecks. And Roddy Piper thought that was really a classy thing to do. Now, the line that I read there, I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum, was completely ad-lib by Roddy Piper, and yet it was so classic, and everybody enjoyed it so much that Carpenter kept it in. And lastly there, Roddy Piper, Being a married man at the time of filming, refused to take off his wedding band. Therefore, several of the scenes you see him with his wedding ring on, kind of giving a little of an allusion to a backstory of what is happening in his personal life, if you would. And I think that's a classic move of Roddy, going with, you know, he's a wrestler, this is one of his first breakout films, and he decides, you know what, I keep this ring on for everything else, I'm not about to take it off now, so you have to all deal with that factor. So I think that's really classy. It references the film Ghostbusters from 1984, and it features the monolithic monsters from 1957. In my opinion, obviously you heard me already speak a little bit about it, this is a conspiracy lover's movie. If you're into conspiracies, this is the film for you. Guaranteed, no questions will be asked. You are into it, you're into this. It's entertaining, it's fun, it's action-packed sci-fi. It's got everything into it. It's pure cult classic movie now. I think what makes it really interesting, it was ahead of its time in certain ways. It really was, if you think about it. If we take it to two interesting standpoints, if you allow me to do this. Standpoint number one, the satanic panic of the early 80s, they always said there was subliminal messaging in the music and in the movies, making the kids do bad things. Isn't that also kind of in the advertising for products nowadays? It's in there, right? And this film is kind of a slap at commercialism heavily. You think about it, it influences into our social media. I mean, if you really go back about maybe what? I would have to say 10, 15 years. Who talked about social media? I mean, seriously, how many people were really on this social media kick? 20 years ago, you know, it wasn't there. But now it's all about getting the clicks and all about getting the likes and everything else. I mean, look, even I do it on this show. All the shows I do it, it's something I always talk about, okay? And even though there's these underlying themes, all these years past, but can so easily be revisited today. It's extremely relevant. I don't think any of the special effects really is suffering from it. I think everything is just moving very nicely. It's a very entertaining movie. And it leaves you with an ability when you come away from seeing this film, a great chance to engage with other film viewers about the movie, what they thought about the film, how does it impact life itself. I think it's great. I think it really condemns the consumerism, all that sort of thing, the commercialism. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool. And again, it's a conspiracy lover's wet dream. I mean, they're into this and they're beyond happy with everything in there. So I saw this film on a Blu-ray. So that's how I saw the movie. And listen, for a piece of music to close us out, we're going to hear from the band Tomb of Nick Cage. And the track is They Live. The band is found on, they got their own .com page, Facebook, Instagram, and Bandcamp. Thank you. right, welcome to Wednesday, November 8th, with the film The Town That Dreaded Sundown from 1976. Has a rating of approved, 1 hour and 30 minutes in length, not celebrating an anniversary. It is a horror crime drama film by director Charles B. Pierce. It was written by Earl E. Smith, and it stars Ben Johnson, Andrew Prine, Dawn Wells, Jimmy Clem, and Jim... I'm just going to spell this name up because I was definitely screwed up. C-I-T-T-Y. I think I know how to say it, but I just don't feel like getting myself in a lot of trouble on the air. So with my audience, which is a mix of adults, teens, and some of you, for some reason, I've heard you said you're listening to it with some of your kids, too, to check out these films. So it's kind of interesting. All right, so the company that put it out was American International Pictures, which is known as AIP. The summary, the story of a hooded berserk killer who terrorizes a border town of Texarkana, Arkansas, in 1946, leaving no fewer than 5 murder victims in his wake. He was never caught, based on one of America's most baffling murder cases. The rating for this film was a 6. I would concur with that rating. Release date was December 24th of 1976, and we have a couple of taglines. Actually, 4 to be exact. All right, here we go. Not everyone who comes to this lover's lane has the same thing on their mind. All right. Number 2, a true story. Number 3, a true tale of Texarkana terror. And lastly, in 1946, this man killed 5 people. Today, he still lurks the streets of Texarkana, Arkansas. All right, a little too long. You know, we could have just gone with, in 1946, ... and then drop it down a little bit. You know, one man killed 5 people, ... and drop it down again down the page. He's still out there lurking. That's it. You know, you could have that, or... he's still lurking, maybe behind you. So almost like to give you that illusion that he's maybe reading the same movie poster behind you right now, and you would have no clue of it. Give that kind of little paranoia, if you would, to the reader of the movie poster. It could go a long way, really could. All right, so a little trivia. The movie is considered to many to be a semi-documentary, based on the real-life string of mysterious killings that terrorized the people of Texarkana in 1946. Now, let's see here. The murder spree came to be known as the Texarkana Moonlight Murders, and ultimately would claim 5 lives and injure many others. The only description of the killer ever obtained was that he was a hooded man. To this day, no one has been convicted of these murders, and they remain unsolved. And there you go. This film was referenced in quite a few movies, so let's go through that. Scream of the Winter Night from 79, Friday the 13th from 1980, Savage Hunt from 1980, Friday the 13th Part 2. Then we got There's Nothing Out There, also Scream from 96, Evil Breed, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher Film, The Strangers, and lastly, it was Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, The Evolution of the American Horror Film. It was followed by, believe it or not, a remake, if you would, in 2014 that was under the same movie title. And it was featured in Killer Legends from 2014. Now, as for my view on this film, I think it sets up horror really well, and it really gives that send up for horror and crime crossover mix for a lot of the decades that would follow it. It just really worked well. Basically you got the psycho killer wearing the kind of potato sack thing, so you can definitely see a little bit how that relates to Part 2 of Friday the 13th. But yeah, it's really weird. He's got the eyes cut out. He's butchering people in Lover's Lane, the heavy breathing. So we got a lot of these kind of cliche things that go into it. And you think about it, right? Because again, when did this film come out? The film came out in 76. 2 years later, we get Halloween. So a mask-wearing guy with a heavy breathing, you know, he's going to be brutal, sadistic, very realistic type of killer. The murders are done in a very realistic manner. You know, most of the cast is complete unknowns, which I think helped with it, had that documentary feel with it. Ben Johnson was really the one of the only true veteran actors in the film. He was very good. He gave that good feel. And then there's also, I have to mention, you know, Andrew Prime with that nervous look of his that made it. He did like such an incredible job and was very credible as a character. Really, for both these men, we really get a sense that their down home kind of nature to them, that we really buy into their character roles, not as actors, but we see them as the characters that are right there, and I think it's great. Overall, it's an excellent movie. It's probably tamed by a lot of today's standards, but it's got that true horror classic feel to it. Is it flawed? Yes. Is it watchable? Of course. So many films are out there, and I just think it's a good movie for you to see. You can find it on Freevee, which is Freevee, or Tubi, or Pluto TV. I should also mention on the same day, I did go back and revisit it, a film I saw back in 2013 called Wasteland. With that being said, we're going to be playing a track here from Bloody Hammers, and the track is The Town That Dreaded Sundown. Hey, that's pretty easy to remember. Anyway, the band is found on Facebook, also BloodyHammers.com, Instagram, Bandcamp, and of course on Twitter. And I should mention, we're going to play another track here from a band called Lex Luger. That's L-U-G-E-R, the track Child's Play. And they are found on Bandcamp, and I will give you a heads up. The track is a bit foreign, if you would, and that's the way of saying that. But then again, this show is being broadcasted worldwide. Therefore, we have people from every place listening to the show, and not everybody is has everything in English. So they're learning, and we're going to play some music here for you all to enjoy.
Did you ever think when the hearse rolls by that someday you are going to die? Shaking every soul. Oh.
on Thursday, November 9th, I saw the film Child's Play from 1988, rated R, 1 hour and 27 minutes in length. They're celebrating a 35th anniversary. Genres for our horror thriller. Director was Tom Holland. The writers were Don Mancini, John, that's L-A-F-I-A, and then, of course, Tom again helping out on the writing duties. It stars Catherine Hicks, Chris Sarandon, Alex Vinson, Brad Dourif, and Dina Manoff. Come They Put It Out was MGM/United Artists. And summary, a struggling single mother unknowingly gives her son a doll imbued with a sewer killer's consciousness. This film got a 6.7 out of 10. I would be vowing this number around that too. Maybe chalk it up to a nice solid 7. But there's a good chance I could make it a 6.5. I just have to really think about it again. I can't, because I always go back and forth on that number in my head. Release date was November 9th of 1988. Taglines, and we do have a few of them. In fact, we have, I think here is about 9 taglines. The fourth one is way, way too long, but maybe you guys will enjoy it. So here we go. No one believes the truth or lives to tell it. You know, problem there. All right, let's go on. He wants you for a new best friend. This one was off a VHS release poster. Chucky did it. Yep, that's true. There you go. Now, here's that fourth one. When people have nightmares, they dream of Freddy. When Freddy has nightmares, he dreams of Chucky. Okay, I get it. Freddy was obviously very big at this point, and this is what you're doing. So, okay, I get it. Next, you'll wish it was only make-believe. All right. And, okay, here we go. Andy Barclay has a new playmate, and who's in no mood to play? All right, going on. This doll is killer. And we've got Chucky is one SOB. All right. Okay. There you go. And lastly, something's moved in with the Barclay family, and it so has the terror. All right. There you go. I like some of them, yes, and others are just way too long, too wordy, too everything. So you guys take that for what you want to. I didn't put any locations in because there's one location that was used, but it's gotten a lot of attention from a lot of fans, and there seems to be certain backlashes occurring because fans are not being respectful of certain limitations and everything. So I'm refraining from putting down the locations. It's not hard to figure out where they are, but I'm not going to contribute into that. All right, so some trivia here. Original script, Child's Play, was at first a satire on the toy marketing and the merchandising for children before the concept morphed into a horror film, which is what we got. So thankful for that. Now, the film, it references Godzilla from 1954, The Devil Doll from 64, Halloween 78, The Shining from 1980, and The Pit from 1981. Now, it was referencing quite a few movies. Exorcist 3, Dowie Dearest, Fear, Bride of Chucky, Leprechaun 5, In the Hood, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, Going to Pieces, the documentary, I've mentioned many times, it seems to be on this show, Ooga Booga, or Ooga Booga, maybe that's how you spell it, it's O-O-G-A, then space, B-O-O-G-A, a film from 2013. Then we have Cooties, Annabelle, Megan, and Scream 6. This was edited into 2 movies. First was Curse of Chucky from 2013, and then Cult of Chucky from 2017. It features a film called Donovan's Brain from 1953, and was followed by the following movies. Child's Play 2, Child's Play 3, The Bride of Chucky, The Seed of Chucky, The Curse of Chucky, The Cult of Chucky, and then the TV series Chucky. All right, I do want to make a note here that this film has no connection to Child's Play from 1972 or Child's Play from 1992. All right, so my opinion. How to put this? I mean, nowadays people think of Chucky as the living doll, right? He's foul-mouthed, he's a psychopath, murderous there. He's really big into the modifications, he's got a bride now, kind of a family man, so to speak, in a way. But when he came about 20 years ago or so, let's face it, the guy was killer, right? I think it's actually more than 20 years. Anyway, irrelevant. The point is, he was incredible. A new spawn in the characters of horror. I mean, really think about it. Just because he's small in stature doesn't mean anything. Chucky gets it done. I mean, he wants to be your friend. He wants to be the good guy with the plan. Of course, the plan is really just become totally evil again and go on another killing spree. But, hey, everything out there with the right imagination and the right ability to believe in can become a true fact. Just like what Chucky has done. I mean, he's done a lot. And, of course, he's spawned a lot of copycats. Really has. And, of course, Brad Dourif there does a superb job with really using his voice and basically made a legendary career in the genre. Catherine Hicks was a very good lead character. And Chris Sarandon decided that he would take a step back and let Catherine have top billing in the movie because of how well she did and such. And I thought that was a cool thing to find out. I really did. I thought, wow, that's a real stand-up kind of maneuver there. Anyway, saw this film on the channel Max. And with that being said, we're going to play two tracks for you all to enjoy. First up is going to be Stormbound with the track Child's Play. They're found on Facebook, Instagram, and Bandcamp. And we're giving the thanks out to Asher Media Relations. Now, this other one is called from a band called Blade Killer with the track High Risk. They are found on Facebook. Also, thanks is going out to M Theory Audio, found on Instagram, also on Bandcamp. And then on Facebook, they're being found under Salem Rose Music. So check all that out. Favor, like the band, support their music. Enjoy.
nose.
Welcome to Friday, November 10th. The film I saw was called High Death from 2018, not rated, 1 hour and 42 minutes in length, celebrating the 5th anniversary. Horror. The director was Anthony Canatese, C-A-T-A-N-E-S-E, Amanda Payton, and Tim Ritter. They were also the writers on the film. It starred the Lynn Fawn Harvey, Fabiana Formica, Kate, and I'll just spell this last name, D-U-R-O-C-H-E-R, Renee, here's another one for you, G-A-L-A-R-Z-A, and then Todd Martin. Come to Put It Out was Wild Eye Releasing. Summary, from the makers of H-I-8. All five new tales for the digital age. When two young women take the terror tour through an underbelly of Hollywood, They are led into a bizarre world of unspeakable horror, unraveling twisted and terrifying tales from the minds of both up-and-coming and also seasoned independent horror directors. Rating for this is a 4.3 out of 10. I would be hard-pressed to give it just a 4. The release date originally for this was March 23rd of 2018. There are no taglines, no films or reference. There are no locations to mention. You see how this is going to go, right? Yeah. They don't even reference HI-8 as a connection. So, okay. How do I explain this movie? All right, here we go. I'm trying to think of a good way to do this. Anthology film? Yes. Wraparound story is very lame. It's poorly constructed, along with a lot of other stories in here. Not all. Some are disjointed, and others are just really lame. The wraparound, like I said, is really bad. It's just, it has a base concept, but doesn't execute it very well. I said five low-budget tales are in here. And I kind of just want to note them to you. I mean, the first one is Death Has a Conscience. Next is The Meeting with the Dealers of Death, which is kind of interesting. It exposes the perils of collecting murder memorabilia. So if you're into that, that could be kind of interesting. So I thought it was a nice little, storyline there. Your third one was Night Drop, is where when you rent your next movie rental, maybe your last, a rental clerk is faced with dark and satanic forces that are let loose from a mysterious DVD found in the return bin. The reason I like this, it kind of took me back to my days of visiting, a VHS place, and renting movies left and right. So I kind of got into that. So I did like that particular story. Then there's Cold Read, which is, it's an okay one. And then lastly there, Terror Tour, which comes in the disturbing end where we meet an ancient seductive evil known as the Muse. This is a really odd story. It just is. Simply put, you can find a lot worse on Tubi, but that's where I saw this film. So I'm trying to be nice about it. But it really wasn't that great. I can't really give it a big endorsement. I did watch it because, again, other people said, hey, that's watch this movie. And, sat down and I watched it. But it wasn't something that I found to be really attention getting. I've seen a lot of anthology films over the years. This one does not really sell it for me. Also on this day, did see the film HI-Fear from 2022. All right, so you obviously know they made a sequel. And I saw the original HI-8, Horror Independent 8 from 2013. With that being said, going to play two tracks here for you all to enjoy. First up is a band called Armory with the track High Speed Death. We're getting off of the HI, getting high speed. The band's found on Bandcamp, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks goes out to the label. Dying Victim Productions, found on Instagram, Bandcamp, and Facebook. Then we have from the Coffin Shakers a track known as Return of the Vampire, and they are found through Facebook, and thanks goes out to the label Rumble Road Records, found on Bandcamp. So enjoy these tracks. We'll be right back.
the twilight mist through the cemetery ground. From dirt drenched in evil, appear without a sound. A dark sky lies ahead us on black wings of the night. Forever to walk in darkness, never to see the light. The thunder in the distance is a sign you'll have to learn. The stars, they fade as evil takes its turn. The vampire returns. We come to seek you out as the city goes to sleep. The hunger that burns so fiercely is calmed by the lives we reap. To the sound of the midnight chime, you'll see us return. Nothing's gonna stop us when the bloodlust starts to burn. The ice-cold wind that grips your heart is a sign you'll have to learn. The stars, they fade as evil takes its turn. The vampire returns. Is a sign you'll have to learn. The stars, they fade as evil takes its turn. The vampire returns.
So the final film of the week was on Saturday, obviously November 11th, and it was Return of the Vampire from 1943, not rated, 1 hour and 9 minutes in length, celebrating an 80-year anniversary. This is a horror drama movie from director Lou Landers, and the writers were Griffin J., Kurt Newman, and Randall Fay, starring Bela Lugosi, Frida Inscourt, Roland Varno, Matt Willis, and Nina Fulch. The company that released it was Columbian Pictures. Summary: when an errant bomb unearths the coffin of a vampire during the London Blitz, a gravedigger unknowingly reanimates the monster by removing the stake from his heart. All right, so, you know, if that sounds a little familiar. It's actually a bit of that was used in Dark Shadows, Johnny Depp. You know, they unearth this, casket, if you would, and they pull out the stake, and, look who's up and walking around. All right, so anyway, the Internet Movie Database rating for it is, rating was 6.2. Release date was November 11th of 1943. And the taglines, here we go. We've got got quite a few really to go through, about eight of them. The fifth one on the list is way, way too long. I mean, okay, we'll get to it all. Here we go. Beauty at the mercy of a monster. Next. The werewolf is on the loose. Man or monster or both? Next. Man or monster or both? All right, number four. Eerie, terrifying, chilling. All right, here's number five. This is the long one. The vampire's prey. A beautiful girl compelled to follow his commands. The blood of her fiancé on his hands. How can she escape the vampire? All right. Next, can she escape the vampire? Here we go. Eerie, chilling, screamy. And lastly, terrifying, paralyzing, horrific. Okay, so there you guys go. All right, just a few of these taglines. I tried to give the emphasis where I could. Some places it was hard to keep from not laughing. You know, it's just what it is, right? Now, a little trivia. Columbia Pictures originally intended for this film to be a direct sequel to Dracula 1931. But when Universal threatened a plagiarism unit suit, if you would, Columbia went ahead and made the film anyway, but changed the names of the characters to avoid any connection to Dracula. It also held back its release for 2 months, so not to compete with Lon Chaney Jr.'s Son of Dracula from 1943. My opinion. Simply put, it's an enjoyable 40s romp horror. All right? Obviously, way tame today. Not a lot for maybe a modern audience, obviously, to care about. But it's still neat to see Bela Lugosi with that reputation of playing Dracula. Even though the character may change names, he's still got the chomps to play that title role that he made so famous. You know, the true bloodsucker in it was in a lot of motion pictures. There's just something about how he carried this role and did really well. And here's the thing, though, here's playing Count Dracula, although not the character name, right? In a little while later, he'd be playing Dracula again, really for the second and final time for Universal with Alvin and Costello Meet Frankenstein. So, you know, that was something for you to kind of fit into your golden age of horror, if you would, right? Where you got Universal, and then Columbia is entering into the fray at that point. You know, I think it's still an enjoyable film. I think it's got a good horror offering, good atmosphere to the film. Doesn't try to take itself too seriously. Does provide a good entertainment value for people to enjoy. I mean, look, the cinematography and all that sort of thing is not going to blow you away. We're not going to have anything that's really going to be shocking where you're like, oh, I see what you mean, Baron. I got to watch this thing in depth. No, but at the same time, I think it's a good movie. I think that you can't go too wrong with it. It's a nice, safe film. If you're looking to probably maybe get your son or daughter into horror, this is a fine entry point to start with. From here, you got a lot of avenues to branch into. But, I mean, if you're going to start, maybe you just start in the Universal territory and you start from that standpoint. Either way, I think Columbia Pictures did a fine job with this film. I think all the parties involved also did a very good job with this particular movie. Anyway, I saw this on a DVD. And with that being said, I also want to mention I just see another film called Dante's Hotel from 2023. It was okay film. I'm not going to go too far into it because it's still brand new and I want people out there to take the time to see it on Tubi. With that being said, we're going to close out our show with one band. The band is called Envenomed with the track Horror Movie, a Skyhook cover track. The band is found on Bandcamp, Facebook, and Instagram, and we put down a music video for you all. So please take a time to like us up on the Baron's Crypt on Facebook. You can like myself, Baron Craze, on Facebook, also found on Instagram, and of course, The Horror Times, which is also found on Facebook. With that being said, enjoy the nightmares that these films may create for you, and have some tantalizing dream about new horrors as you see them maybe reimagined with one of these films on this list. Good night, or good day, but let the terrors reign supreme.
don't care who's gonna lose or win. Listen to this and I'll tell you something.